Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for parenting. The perpetually busy Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Here's the first question. I'm struggling with my 16-year-old son's phone addiction and I desperately need advice. It feels like we're constantly locked in a battle over his screen time. I ask him multiple times a day to put the phone down. Each time it turns into an argument, he accuses me of being a nag, a control freak, and often says he hates being at my house because of it. He spends almost all his time in his room, glued to his phone, and claims it's the only place he finds peace. But the moment I ask him to step away from his screen, it ruins that peace for him, and the cycle of conflict starts again. I've always expected him to help around the house, but now he resents even the smallest task if it means he has to put the phone down. He insists he's happy in his room doing nothing but being on his phone, but I'm deeply concerned. He's on his phone from the minute he gets home from school until he falls asleep, even breaking house rules by sneaking it into the toilet. This evening, I tried distracting him by suggesting a game of cards, but he kept reaching for the phone. And when I suggested he put it out of sight, he called me a control freak again. He has told me he hates everything on television and Netflix, so he doesn't want to watch TV as a family or on his own. How can we have peace at home again?
Oh, I think this one, I'd be really interested in what listeners have to say about this too, but I think it's really relatable. I would hear some version of this every day of the week.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably one of the most common conversations I have. And I've mentioned before, like, I'm involved in that Gen Free campaign. I do a lot of talks in schools, Sean, about, you know, this new drive to create phone-free spaces in schools. But really the message is around delaying the point of access to smartphones for as long as you possibly can. And I know that's a very kind of fluid statement,
yes,
but as long as you possibly can, because I think we can't just say the right age is this, because no two kids are the exact same at any age. But, you know, there's so much research into phone addiction, not phone addiction, all of that. And, you know, until recently, it's been very hard to say, can you be addicted to a phone? It's more a compulsion. But really, when you think about it, addiction is the point when a compulsion becomes a dependence.
Yeah.
And that's really where we're at. And there was recent summary of all of the scientific research, that evidence that does exist. This is now about 82 studies across over 150,000 participants. So a substantial review was done. And the estimates emerging from that were that 25% of people, not teenagers, but people worldwide, have some form of smartphone addiction. And that's really significant, because there was some other research done by the Pew Research Center who found 95% of teens have a smartphone. That didn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I'd love to know the other 5%, but 95% have them. And almost half of those say themselves, self-report, that they're online, quote unquote, almost constantly. Now, 10 years ago, that stat would have been 25%. So in the last 10 years, that has doubled. Mm. So there is a rise in this. There is an increase. And we are aware that this is an issue. So just to provide some context for a parent getting frustrated about this, I mean, there's a lot of things. I'm going to say the obvious things now. And then you're going to say, look, he's 16. Joanna, the horse is truly bolted.
Yes.
And I get that. But when you are trying to delay that point of access to technology, it isn't like you kind of see it out. And then at whatever age you've chosen, let's say 15, you say, there's your phone. Oh, my work here is done. You know, I delayed the point. You have to also be preparing your kids for responsible use with technology. Mm. Because in this, and what I'm hearing is, why can't this child self-regulate his own use? He's not going to.
Yeah,
his choice is, I'd rather be in my room on my phone watching content that I relate to, that speaks to me, and I don't want to be downstairs playing cards with you because I'm 16.
Even though
I totally appreciate the parents' effort to do that. But if you can agree terms of use at the start, and really for any parents listening who might be approaching this stage, the odds are heavily in your favour before you've handed over the phone, because you can agree pretty restrictive terms of usage and they'll agree because they want the phone. And then you can ease those terms and those restrictions as you see more responsible usage, more competence, more self-regulation going in with them. The key, though, is that once you set those boundaries, that you hold them, and that you really, and this isn't too late for this parent to set phone-free zones. I'm noting the toilet is a phone-free zone, but perhaps the kitchen and perhaps the dining room, where everyone has to go At least a couple of times a day, are also phone-free zones. But you have to lead by example and not be on the phone yourself in those. Bedrooms are phone-free zones, ideally, because none of us should have our phones in bed. They should not be the last thing we're touching at night and the first thing we're touching in the morning. But they really are for so many of us. I think that's really important. I mean, technology has changed us all in so many ways in terms of how we sit, how we speak, how we think, how we communicate, but also how we share and how we consume information. All of that has changed, you know, but there are positives. There are very real positives to online communities and connections that we can make. And there are negatives as well. So just delaying that point of access as long as possible. When this parent says, the moment I ask him to step away from his screen, everything flips off. And I'm going, yeah. How are you asking him? I'm wondering about the tone. I'm wondering about the body language, your facial expression. What are your nonverbal cues that let him know, I'm judging you, I'm sick of this, and I'm coming at you?
Exasperation there.
And I get that as well. Yeah. But not how, I mean, how well do any of us respond to somebody approaching us in an exasperated way? We tend to not go, gosh, you're right. Thank you for that new perspective. I will now change my behavior. That's not how it works. So watch the critical tone and come at it in a more kind of gentle, creative way. I'm wondering if you could use the phone and the fact that he's so heavily attached to it to engage some of the repair of this rupture in terms of saying to him, come here, you've been on that all day. Not judging, though, watch the tone. Show me the funniest thing you've seen on TikTok all day. Show me the weirdest thing you've seen. Just tell me the daftest, most stupid thing you've seen. And then go, okay, listen to what I read today. I heard on the radio today. I saw on the news today. And you're responding in kind, but you're using different mediums than the phone to draw from.
Yeah.
And so in that, he has to come to you at the phone, close physical proximity, show you something that made him laugh. You can then share a moment of connection over it. And that's, I know it sounds like, but he's still on the phone. Okay, but what you're trying to promote is connection. If you want to correct behavior, you do it within connection. And the connection here is a little fraught because every time you challenge him, he's saying you're a control freak.
Yeah.
Now, at his age, he's also developmentally in that phase of, I have left the age of command, do as you're told.
Yeah.
And I am firmly in the age of consent. Let's talk about it. Let's negotiate. I hear your invitation to put down my phone and I decline, thankfully, you know, and move on with that. I do think, hold in mind that our brains behave differently when we are addicted or really have compulsive use with something. And so be aware of how you're approaching him. It's what you're doing at the moment while on the surface reading this letter. There's nothing wrong with what you're doing. It's not effective. So you have to come at this in a different way. I think you have to give him space and downtime when he gets in, because I imagine he has not got his phone all day at school.
Yeah.
He's coming in. He's going straight on it. Have very clear expectations about chores and being present at the dinner table with no devices, things like that. Just really clear about it and consistent. But the one thing, Sean, that's jumping out at me here, there's many things, but this one in particular, what else does this kid have in his life? Because I'm hearing about school and I'm hearing about in his bedroom on the phone.
Yeah.
I'm not hearing activities. I'm not hearing social life. I'm not hearing seeing friends. I'm not hearing out and about at training or, you know, nothing like that going on. And just when our phones become the source of all of our social and entertainment needs, that really breeds loneliness and isolation.
Yeah.
And it then is a major contributor to other significant mental health issues. So I would be looking at how can you stack the odds on the other side? What else could he be doing to lessen the amount of time? You know, I think the average teenager is spending over 7 hours a day on their phone. Now, that's the average. You're definitely going to have people who are. And if anyone is shocked by that, you know, treat yourself to one of those wellness settings on your own phone and let it tell you at the end of the week how long you've been on it. And that will really kind of put into perspective some of those numbers. But he's a busy kid at school all day, secondary school. So the amount of hours that are left, try to make it that it's not just the phone. Because for me, there's something else missing in his life and it's about social connection.
Yeah. Yeah. I would kind of fear that as well. God love them. Yeah. I suppose the difference, if it's, you know, a kind of a compulsion stroke addiction.
Yeah.
That's the most difficult thing to get a person to break away from because they have to recognize it at such.
And be prepared to change.
And he's in none of those places.
Yeah. And you see, if he, you know, you could also do the whole thing, and it's always worth using paradox as well and saying, look, I got this wrong. You're 16 and I didn't agree terms of use. And now I'm asking you to come off your phone. But I never gave you a warning that I would expect you to be on it less than you are. And that's on me.
Yeah.
I'm taking full responsibility for that. But because of it, and I'm really looking at my own phone use here, and I'm realizing I miss you. We hardly ever talk. We never hang out. And I really miss you. So we're going to have phone free spaces in our house and phone free times. And what you are on your phone in your time, that's fine. When you come in from school, you have time. When your homework is done, you have time, whenever. But I do want dinner time. I want our meal times and just half an hour
Yeah.
Catching up with each other, checking in. And I think if you do that, the other side of it is, you know, at some point you're paying for the phone.
Mm.
Unless he has a job, which doesn't sound like it because it's not mentioned
and
here.
And the Wi-Fi, presumably, as well, that the phone is
now, look, if you
on.
Get into a battle of wills with turning off the Wi-Fi and he's 16, like the time for some of those, that's just going to become a power battle you're going to lose. Mm. But I think it's more saying to him, I miss you and I'd really like to spend time with you.
Yeah.
And finding a shared interest. But I would look to join him in the phone. It's clearly something that he's getting a lot of entertainment out of. But let him bring you into that world with him so he's not alone in it. Just some isolation and loneliness is just bubbling up for me when I read this one.
I have a 4.5-year-old daughter who has a sensitive disposition and sometimes needs extra support with change and new experiences. I have started to notice a pattern of behaviour that I'm concerned about. If we are visiting someone's house or having people over, she will often identify a child closest in age to her and say that she doesn't like them, doesn't want to play with them, etc. I feel that this is her way of trying to deal with maybe feeling nervous when anticipating the situation. Usually I don't make much of it. I tell her that she can play by herself if she wants, but that she has to speak kindly to everyone. There may be a standoff at the start with a couple of barbed comments from the 4.5-year-old, but usually after 10 minutes, everyone is getting on fine. My worry is that she seems to default to a defensive coping strategy. I don't want her to get into the habit of acting mean when I think she actually just feels nervous. Would love to hear your thoughts on this.
I think this parent is spot on. I think it's a defensive strategy. I was thinking that as you were reading it, and the defense is to protect herself from the vulnerability of getting to know somebody new or being in a new unfamiliar situation. It's more an expression of, I don't like how this feels, rather than I don't like you. But she's 4.5. So the kind of nuance of the emotional fluency it would take to say, oh, this is actually about how I'm feeling. It's easier projected onto the other person and go, it's you, you're the problem. Stay away from me. Oh, I feel better now. Mm. And to do it that way. So it's about keeping herself safe in new unfamiliar situations. Now, if she's okay after ballpark 10 minutes. It's a relatively short adjustment period, Sean.
It
really is. I know it might be a torturous 10 minutes when she's saying, I'd love to know what her barbed comments are. But, you know, that can be a long
sass,
10 minutes if there's a lot of sass going on in it. But it is just 10 minutes. So the what you're doing, you know, you're not pushing it. You're not forcing her. But you are saying, look, you can stay with me until you're ready, but you must be kind. All of those boundaries are really appropriate. I think I'd do a bit of prep with her at home, though, through story stemming. And story stemming, like, it's a therapeutic technique, but you can adapt it and just use it in this context as a parent. And you just get little characters. It could be Doll's House characters or little Sylvanian families or little Playmobiles, whatever it is you have, little people. And you're going to play out the scenario that you know so well. Short, sweet, succinct, because you're going to play it out a number of times. Mm. And you want to play out exactly how you want it to go. So you're going, there's someone new, you have the little character that represents her. You don't have to use her name for it, but that represents her feeling nervous and unsure and maybe getting a bit cross, but deciding to stay near the parent's leg and keep an eye and then go out and play it out exactly like you want her to do. Do that over and over and over. So have your own little set of characters, because otherwise you won't be able to find the one you want the next day. And then when she's in these situations, what she'll default is to that story that you've been playing over and over and over. And it's making the association of, oh, this is like the game we play. I can do it like the game.
Yeah.
And it's just a little way of doing this. I'd also, though, with a kid like this, because she is sensitive, as this parent is identifying, increase the sensory play. She's still at that stage. She's coming into story play at her age, you know, that narrative play, small world play, it's often called. But the sensory play is still very, very important. And with sensitive kids, I'd increase it. They tend to need a bit more of it for longer. Keep that up and do some sensory play with her before you're going to a situation like this where you can anticipate she might find it difficult, and then just gently remind her how much fun she had last time when she felt comfortable.
Yes.
That it will be nice.
Yeah. This is one of the more unusual questions we've had. Last week, my wife and I watched a documentary about Donald Trump on Netflix. My son was in the room, but we thought he was playing on his iPad and wasn't paying attention. The following day, the news was on the TV and they played a clip of his rally in New York. That night, when I was putting my son to bed, he told me he was worried if Donald Trump gets elected because of what he heard on the TV. For context, my wife and I couldn't have a child naturally, so we adopted our son. He doesn't have the same coloured skin as us, And I think all the commentary around Donald Trump being a racist in the media is having a huge impact on him. I've tried to keep him away from the commentary in the meantime, hoping by this day next week a lot of it will have blown over. However, this morning on another radio station, he heard a comedy sketch about Donald Trump in which they refer to him as a racist. I'm aware as a boy with brown skin at the moment, hearing this stuff must be triggering. I've tried to explain that this is happening in America and not Ireland, but I don't want him to feel I'm minimising any of the worries he has around race and racism. How do I manage his concerns, but assure him that all is going to be okay at the same time? He's 9, he's old enough to know what's going on at the moment.
Oh, that's a lot, isn't it?
That's a lot. Wow,
that's really, really hard. Yeah. And I'm so sorry for this kid that he had to hear that. And I'm just thinking, Sean, that that's one example of story about division and race that's in the news at the moment. But there's so many globally going on.
Yeah.
And it's easy to say, you know, he's 9. So that, you know, but younger kids, we try to keep a lot of this news away from. But, you know, it's such a good example that we think they're not paying attention when they're in the room and they
absolutely
are absolutely soaking everything up. I mean, what you could do is, you're right, don't minimise it. Don't say this only happens in America, because it's just not true.
Yes. Yeah.
Just to be clear about that. And you can draw attention to other candidates in that race. You can talk about other campaigners. You can share the messages of others, although a lot of it is fear-based messaging with a week to go in the election anyway.
Yeah.
And you could also say to him, look, I don't really enjoy listening to this coverage at the moment either. The outcome will be next week. We don't know what it's going to be. But, you know, let's take a break from it and let's turn it off. And when it's on in the radio, do you know what? And you own it and say, I actually don't want to hear this anymore. Are you OK if I turn this off? It doesn't mean you don't talk about it. It just means maybe limiting some of the rhetoric that's going on at the moment, which is very, very divisive. And I think that's a good point, though, really, because our world is very divided and divisive at the moment. And his worry has context, and it has context beyond the American election. Let's be honest. I think that what you could do is keep emphasizing the people who are doing good and who are working for good and wanting a safe, fair, inclusive world, and that those people are still the majority at the moment.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe slightly.
Yeah.
I'm ever the optimist on that. But just drawing attention to who is working for that and including yourselves in that conversation. You know, this isn't how we think, this isn't how we live or we believe. What I'd add, though, Sean, it's not in this letter, but there's something just coming up for me about, I think I'd get curious about his experiences as a child of colour in his school, in his community, in his activities, clubs, organisations he's in, because feeling othered, you know, is anxiety provoking in and of itself. And it may not be something you really understand. Why am I feeling that way? And then when you hear something like this kind of news coverage, you go, oh, is it because of that? And you're trying to join the dots, because it can be easier to talk about Trump than Jamie in school.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And I think I would get curious to just see what his lived experiences are around and what his own thoughts and questions are, because this may be, to use this negative news coverage in a positive way, an opportunity to open up a conversation about what his experience as a child of colour is in your family, which is a different colour, in your society, and how he's making sense of that, how he's making meaning and what supports he might benefit from with that. I would use it to open up a conversation about that. I think anybody, by the way, not just if you're parenting a child of colour, but any of us should have inclusive books, toys, you know, place props at home. It should be just there. And we should all be speaking to our children about, you know, inclusivity and diversity, and we should all be doing that. But I think I'd use this with this kid as to go deeper into that conversation and just explore his own thoughts, feelings, fears, worries. So not to come at it as we do, as we all do as parents, which is to minimize and say, well, it's in America and, you know, don't you worry about that. And that's not what we think here and all of this. But actually to say, well, hang on, what is it you're thinking? What is it you're feeling? And to let him really exhale that.
Yeah. Because even if at the moment he just sees a scary yellow man on the telly and that's what's worrying him, as a person of colour, at some point he probably will encounter racism.
If he hasn't already, he's 9 years old.
How do you can't prepare someone, or can you? I don't know.
Well, you can't prepare because, gosh, you know, it's just, you can prepare in that some people are who don't understand things, or when people are afraid, or they get afraid by difference and somebody who's not like them, they can say really clumsy things. Mm. And some people say mean things. They're trying to be mean and they're trying to hurt you, but most people just say something really clumsily.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's coming from a place of not understanding. No matter why somebody says it, it isn't okay. And when something like that is said, you're allowed to say, hey, that's not okay. That feels unkind to me and that hurts my feelings. And to go to a safe adult. If you're in school, that would be a teacher. At home, that would be us. And we will make sure you're supported in it. But I think I would want him understanding about racism, because that's global. That's endemic.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, he is, I think using news stories or things you hear on the radio or you read and saying, gosh, I was listening to something today and it made me think, we haven't really talked about this.
Mm.
Let's talk about it. And it gives you that little bit of a, where are you pulling this from? Because kids are immediately going, why? Why are you talking? But you link it to something you heard, saw, read, and just say, it just made, and that's for all of our children, by the way, you know, let's talk about this and let's be clear that everybody is the same and that everybody deserves to be treated the same and there is no difference with people based on their skin. And that's easy for me to say and it sounds like a trope because in reality, we know that people are treated differently based on ability, skin color, body shape, size, anything that can be pointed out as a difference can other people. And so we do need to challenge that and that does start at home.
Yeah. At least, I suppose, because we've had lots of questions before about climate change. At least this, you can phrase this in a way of this is something we can do something about. Other people can do, individuals can do something about it. Whereas we've had the questions before about kids terrified by the notion of climate change.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's so large as to feel insoluble.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, gosh. I hate to end on that note. Joanna, thanks a million for coming into us today. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.